This is Scott Myers from Deer Valley's Royal Street Cafe, and we are delighted to support KPCW. Located in the Silver Lake Lodge, Royal Street Cafe features new American cuisine and is open daily with sit-down service for lunch, après-ski, and dinner. From 11:30 a.m. to 8 p.m., cocktails, beer, and wine are available. For reservations, 645-6724 or deervalley.com.
Back to Sundance in the morning, and my goodness, we're into the second hour already. Unbelievable. But that time flies when you're working with your co-host, David Darcy from Screen International. Hey there.
I love that. I love the way you repurposed that line. But yeah, time is flying. We found some, two important subjects to talk about. One is the films themselves, and the other is how are these films going to get to an audience, which I think is something that every filmmaker, particularly young filmmaker, should be aware of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at this point, Greg Whitley, director of MIT, this is already going on Netflix. Is that right?
Yeah, we about 4 or 5 months ago agreed to terms with Netflix, and then together we hatched this idea and. Wouldn't it be great if we got into Sundance? And if we did, let's premiere it while the festival is going on. And the logic being, of course, you get all – a film this size gets the apex of its buzz during a festival like Sundance. And usually the first film I did, we waited 10 months to actually have that film come out and premiere in theaters. And everybody's forgotten about it by then.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is really a common problem. But let's – before we talk about the release of this film – let's talk about the genesis of it, because watching it, we're seeing a relationship between the filmmaker and the Romney family that on the screen is starting in 2006. And presumably the film project started before that. How did this start, and how did you convince Mitt Romney? I mean, here's a guy who was eventually done in by a filmmaker who was filming him at a fundraiser. How did you convince Mitt Romney that making a film, since independent filmmakers tend to be on the left, and probably most of them who voted didn't vote for Mitt Romney, how'd you convince him to participate?
My first film was a film called New York Doll, and it premiered here at Sundance, got distribution. Like I mentioned, 10 months later, it was in movie theaters. So it received a modest art house release. It played about 15 cities across the United States. Boston was one of those. And I would get these reports the following Monday from the distributor. That was a spreadsheet of how much money did we make? How many people came to see the movie in, say, New York or Miami or, in this case, Boston? And I looked at Boston's gate receipts. It was playing one theater in Harvard Square, and I did the math based on the gross receipts, and there must have been 6 people in attendance per screening. And this guy emailed me later that day saying it was one of the 6 people. He said, "Hey, I saw your movie. I loved it. I looked you up on the web, and I just wanted to let you know that the governor of Massachusetts was sitting 2 rows in front of me." So there's 6 people in attendance, and Mitt Romney is one of those people.
But it was a music documentary with an LDS connection.
Yeah, it was a punk rocker. It was a guy that was part of a proto-punk rock band in the early 70s called the New York Dolls. He kind of disappeared for 28 years and resurfaced. As he had joined the Mormon Church and was working in the genealogical center in near the Los Angeles Mormon Temple.
Arthur Killer Kane.
Great memory. Right?
Yeah.
Yes, Arthur Kane. So that was – our first film was about him. Mitt saw that and apparently liked it from what I heard. And I just started paying attention to him as a result of that. I just thought that was so interesting that the governor of Massachusetts would go see this movie about a cross-dressing punk rocker. And his name began to be mentioned as a possible presidential candidate, and I was just finishing my second film. A producer came to me and said, "Well, what are you interested in doing next?" And I go, there's this guy who's a Mormon governor out of Massachusetts, and he's thinking about running for president. If he does, I think I want to make a movie about that. And this guy just happened to say, "Well, I know someone who knows his son." And he arranged a lunch with Tag Romney, who was working for the Dodgers at the time. We ate at this little sushi restaurant next to Chavez Ravine, and I just pitched him on this movie I wanted to make about his dad, if his dad ran. And Tag said, "Well, I think that's great. Let's do it." Mitt initially said no, but Ann Romney said yes. Hmm. That eventually led me right up here to Park City, where the family was gathering to discuss whether or not they would run for president. He had a place in Deer Valley. The whole family gathered. And I was allowed to film it, and I just kept filming for 6 years.
And at the time when you were filming in 2006, you thought this might just be about one presidential campaign cycle.
Yeah. Oh, I was convinced. One, when I started filming, it was Christmas Eve. I thought it would just last that night. They gave me no indication that they had any interest in making a documentary film. I just pitched them, just how about just let me film this conversation, and it'll just be my gift to you. Who knows where it goes? Who knows if you'll even end up running for president? And I thought in my head, optimistically, if I'm allowed to film, I've got to somehow find money to keep me afloat for 2 years. I mean, this certainly can't last for longer than 2 years, but it lasted for six.
So why didn't you make a film about what happened in 2008?
Why did I make
it? Why didn't you? Why didn't you say, well, this guy tried, didn't get the nomination. There was a lot of talk about let's say, elements of his personality that accounted for him not getting the nomination then. That was a story. I mean, a lot of journalists wrote that story. Why did the film end up being made? Why did you choose not to make the film then?
Well, I did. I made a film. My arrangement with Mitt Romney was, look, just if you're going to give me this access, I will agree not to release this footage until you are either finished being president or you're finished running for president. I won't release it. In 2008, he told me he was done. And I was with him the night that he was writing his concession speech. I traveled with him to this CPAC gathering where he announced he was getting out. And I thought, well, that's it. So I went home and edited my film, or started to. And Tech called me and said, whoa, wait a minute. He might be running again. And so I didn't know what to do with that. I guess as his interest in actually running again took real shape, I thought, I have no choice. Let's just keep filming.
Yeah. Was there unanimity in the Romney family about going ahead with this kind of scrutiny from you? I mean, it's not as if you were, you were trying to undermine something, but the camera's there. The camera seems to be there at a lot of intimate moments when they're discussing their own uncertainty about all sorts of things in the campaign.
The campaign itself, the staff and the advisors, did not want me there. But the family appeared to be fairly united and know you should be here. I think over the course of the first 3 or 4 or 5 months that I was shooting, I was focusing almost exclusively on the family because the campaign staff didn't want me around. It was sort of the inverse of the war room or that Obama movie that came out where you really had only access to the staff and not the candidate. My problem was the reverse. But in doing that, I think the family just became comfortable with me, and as best as I could tell, were all on board with allowing me to film.
Do you think the staff had the feeling that David was earlier talking about, that a documentary filmmaker must be a left winger? He's going to be out to knife him in the back.
Well, I don't think my politics ever came into question. I think they were largely concerned about two things. One, I'm getting very candid footage that even if I'm not somebody that has an agenda to try and bring down this candidate, I could maybe leave a hard drive on an airplane, or somebody could sneak into in my loft and swipe it and make hay with it. Or they were also concerned with just my mere presence of filming is a nuisance. It's a bother. It's distracting. And we've got this important job to do of trying to elect this guy. And so, for a multitude of reasons, I completely understand they did not want me around.
So Bill Clinton, and I'll quote the part that we can say on the radio. Bill Clinton did say about Mitt Romney that he's a guy who really should think about whether politics is the line of work that's really suited to him. Now, Romney was extremely successful as a leader and as a corporate leader in the private sector. He was successful as governor of Massachusetts. In fact, some of the things he was most successful at were things he repudiated as he moved to become the nominee of the Republican Party. Is Romney – now, and he keeps coming back. Is he – and as you said, after 2008, he said, I'm through. Then he comes back, gets the nomination. People thought he was the most credible person. What we've witnessed now in New York and New Jersey is that the person we thought would be the most credible person for the nomination of the Republican Party, i.e. Chris Christie, has found that, to use a culinary metaphor, his goose is cooked. Could we see Mitt Romney coming back again? Is that possible?
I was shocked he ran the second time, so maybe you shouldn't listen to anything I'm saying, but I would be shocked if he ran again.
Was there – back to the campaign, just for our listeners, was there – a real division between the family and the campaign staff? And in some way, did that account for, you know, what happened, the campaign not being as successful as it could have been toward the in you know, the last couple of weeks?
I didn't see that, but admittedly, I was not privy to inner working the strategy meetings. I mean, really, if you see this film, I've got some strategy meetings on film, but it's really intimate moments of the family, fly on the wall. What is it like to be a candidate from a personal side running for president? Even given that access, there are all kinds of strains. There are all kinds of you can go and read the account of just game change and then the sequel to it. Even in Barack Obama, a successful campaign, there's tension between the family and the campaign staff. I didn't notice an unusual amount of strife in the case of the Romney campaign and the Romney family. So if it was there, that would have to come from someone else.
Were there any moments, certain moments where either from the staff or the family they'd say, boy, Greg, I wish you weren't around now, but we did make a deal with you and, you know.
No Romney ever told me no. And that was my personal rule, that the campaign could tell me no all they wanted, but until a person named Romney said, you've got to leave, I wasn't going to stop filming. And they just never did.
What about Mitt Romney did you get from this that you think really has been neglected or misrepresented in the media? The notion that the media misrepresents things, which is not held only by the Romney family, comes out quite a bit in the conversations in this film. What about Romney do you know or did you learn that you think the media either didn't learn or never really represented in a proper way?
Well, I think that there is, in general, a really strange way that we go about electing people. And we put them now through this extended process of vetting. And part of that vetting process, especially if you reach a certain stature as a candidate, is you're assigned a literal army of reporters who travel with you to attempt to do this public good of uncovering just who is this candidate. And in spite of that, I've just noticed in the case of Mitt Romney, he's the only presidential candidate that I ever got to know personally, there is this enormous disparity between who he actually really is and how he's perceived publicly. I have to believe that's true probably across the board.
Well, Al Gore, that we ran into that with Gore. John McCain did a pretty good job of representing his personality and being, you know, the person who he was.
I think it's incredibly difficult under those circumstances to be who you really are.
Yeah.
I think there is so much blame to go around for that disparity. It's not all the candidate. It's not all the campaign. It's not all the press's fault.
Yeah.
We all work in unison to create this disparity.
Yeah, who's going to want to watch a film about Mitt Romney now that he is gone from politics and, you know, we're moving ahead, focusing on the future in politics, and people might view this as old news?
Diane Sawyer said this on election night. She goes, what is the family thinking right now? She's saying this on air. What is the family thinking right now as these election results are coming in? And I'm there. And this film answers that question.
Okay. And the next chance to see the answer to that question, Greg, you've got another showing at the Mark later on, late afternoon today.
We premiere in Park City tonight.
All right. And also Monday at 12:30 at the Redstone. You're going over to Sundance on Wednesday. And then in the Park City area, last one is a week from today, Saturday, 8:30 p.m. at the Prospector.
Yeah.
And so glad to bring you full circle with the film back to Park City. Greg Whiteley, director of MIT.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
This is Larry Warren.
And I'm Doug Wells, inviting you to listen Monday mornings at 9 after NPR News to Mountain Money, KPCW's show about making money, spending money, and investing it wisely.
You'll hear from local entrepreneurs and national figures, anyone with a good story to tell about how to survive and thrive in the marketplace.
Mountain Money. We'll keep it simple and useful every Monday at 9.
Brought to you by Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, Park City Chamber Bureau, and Iron Mountain Group.
The Local View is on the air each weekday, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. right here on KPCW, featuring national news from NPR, international headlines with the BBC, and plenty of local news from our award-winning news department. Interviews, music, your phone calls, lost and found, public service announcements, and I'll be your host. This is Randy Barton. Sponsored by CNS Creative Services, Ranch Sports, Mercer Automotive, and Molly Bloom's Gastro Pub.